Good morning, everybody, and welcome to day number four of the conference. It's my pleasure to introduce today's speaker, François Laborie from Orsay, who will tell us about minimal surfaces and the complex geometry of the hitching component.
Thank you for being here. So as the other speaker has stressed, it is a very stressful experience to speak into such a huge audience. And to honor the legacy of Thurston. And also the organizer has put the bar very high with a very dreary title, scary title, What's Next? So we have to keep up with that. But anyway, so I'm very stressed out. But I guess I've been relieved by two things. First, I had a note by my housekeeper this morning, act without expectation in the hotel. And the other thing is we had a lot of very good advice by these amazing speakers yesterday. So let's try to summarize some of those. Don't use your notes. Thank you. Prepare your talk for a week. They should have said that a week before. Talk about a Higgs boson. So I try to do that. And so another thing was about wearing your audience shoes, right? So sorry, I hope that orthopedic sandals will go for you. Because there's no way I'm going to, my wife strictly forbidden me for socks with Crocs. I'm sorry. So let's go ahead and try to come to math, and maybe I'll tell you something about my own only experience with Bill, which has a kind of a little bit distressing. So I'm going to talk about surfaces, and for me, a surface is this object. So it's a higher genus greater than 2. It is closed, it is oriented and it's connected, and it is a picture from the internet as well. Okay, so what's important about surface? So let S be the surface, so this is S. So I'm going to be interested in the pi 1 of S, and as a group, so it's a very well-known group. But it has some very nice properties among other groups. So Gromov has this classification of mathematics as a gaseous, liquid, and solid. So gaseous is like set theory, which would be like free groups. So solid mathematics is like a Riemannian geometry, where everything is very rigid. And higher rank lattices would be extremely solid and have very little representations. And somehow, the interesting mathematics should be liquid mathematics. And for him, it was a symplectic geometry, which was both a rigid and flexible. And definitely, surface group are somehow liquid. So what do I say is that? So let G now be a reductive Lie group. So if you don't know what it is, it's not very important. Just think of SLNC or SLNR, for instance, on classical group like that. And so I'm going to be interested into, so a surface group have lots of homomorphism into G. So you may consider this set of homomorphism of pi 1 of S into G. And it turned out that what you are really interested in is a conjugacy class of this representation. So you have to mod out by G, and you call the resulting object the character, the representation variety of G. So I'm not going to be very careful because this is actually a very complicated object. It's really for a grown-up mathematics. It's a variety for complex Lie groups. It's even a stack. So it's really grown-up mathematics. So I'm just going to emphasize two things. So first, it's non-empty, which is the flexibility of surface groups. And there is also a rigidity in the sense that this space has a structure. So the structure is that the smooth points K carries a symplectic geometry, a symplectic structure, and this is a something which is due to a TR bot and also Goldman in full generality. And this is a very important feature of surface group, which is not shared by other groups. Okay, so what I would like to talk about today is that in some cases, to talk about other stuff, which is another, let's say, cousin structure of symplectic geometry, which is a complex geometry. So when does this set, this space as a, so just imagine it's a manifold, if it is not. When does this space as a complex structure? So there is two beautiful theorems that tells you about the complex geometry of this set. So the first theorem is, so I have to ask Etienne about, I think it's, apparently it's Riemann. So here the group is G is R. So this is a famous result that say that if S G is a Riemann surface, so meaning that you add an extra structure on the surface itself, which is a complex structure, then this character variety here, which is a very complicated name for just, in this case, the H1 of the surface, is a complex manifold. It's a complex object, and it's actually identified with the abelian differentials. So the object which can be written locally as FZ DZ. And of course, F is here holomorphic. So that's the first instance of complex geometry and relation between complex geometry and topology, which is this very old and beautiful theorem. So there is another very important result, which we all, I guess, love, which I think apparently should be attributed to Fricke and Klein, but of course, Poincaré knew it. So it says that the space of complex structures on S can be identified as actually a connected component of this representation variety in the case the group is SL2R. So that's, again, a very beautiful result. And of course, these two results have something in common. So in spirit, they relate topology and complex analysis. And but they have something which are different. So one difference, which is a little bit superficial, is that the group are not the same. So we'll see that there is a common theory that encompasses the two examples. The most important difference is that in this context, this theorem does not depend on the choice of a complex structure on the surface itself, right? So just, that's really a fascinating result, I think. So what I will try to do today, to this morning, is to go from this board to this board and explain how can one relate these two results. And I'm going to explain extension of, first I'm going to want to try to explain extension of this result here in the context of a Hitchin component. So let's do that. But first, okay, so maybe I'm going to be, to set up my plan. So first, I'm going to talk about Hitchin components. Then I'm going to talk about this a non-abelian arch theory, which is of course a very bad name, theory. I mean, I don't think there is such a thing as a non-Euclidinization theorem, right? You say hyperbolization theorem, so. And the third part is going to, I'm going to explain stuff about how minimal surfaces come in the picture. Okay, so what about Hitchin components? So Anna explained what are the Hitchin components, but I'm going to do that again. Because it's very important to get the definition several times. So my group G is going to be SLNR. And it's part of a more general class of groups, which are called a real split simple groups. And to be very short, I'm just going to say that these groups are the least compact of all Lie groups. So G is SLNR. So I want to build representation of a surface group into SLNR. So the first thing that you could do is just to start with a trivial representation, but that's precisely not what I don't want to do. So how do you produce representation? So first, let's define what is a function representation. So you start with a irreducible representation of SL2R. And again, as Anna did, so that's a free me. I'm going to be very sloppy about SLN, PSL. OK, so start with the irreducible representation. There is only one representation in every irreducible representation in any dimension. So you take with the irreducible representation into SLNR. So here you take a classical function, let's say discrete faceful representation, discrete faceful representation, and the corresponding objects through this diagram. So these objects are called function representation by definition. So this is a function representation. So that's a definition, right? So that's a nice way to produce representation, but it's going to be, of course, a rather small set. It's just going to be the size of Teichmuller space. So now you say the representation is Hitchin. If you can deform it, meaning you deform the generator, it to a function representation. And finally, the Hitchin component. Sorry? To deform is just to deform the generator, keeping the relation fixed. The Hitchin component, H of SG, this is just a set of those Hitchin representation. Yeah, exactly. Except the point is that the topology, I want to avoid speaking of the topology of the character variety. It's not even out of the way I define it. So I just deform that, right? So now we're in a good shape to state a very beautiful theorem by Hitchin. Exactly. That's what I just did. What?
It's a path in the discrete subset, isn't it? In the course of making your deformation,
yeah,
you're keeping your representation having the
No. No, 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 no.
Oh.
No, no.
So there are lots of non-discrete representations?
No. I'm sorry to say no to you, John. But that's a theorem. But that's a very good point. We are not talking here about discrete representation. We're just deforming among representation. A priori, Hitchin representation are not discrete. You don't know anything about those. So, but we know something, and this is a beautiful theory by Hitchin, which I'm going to explain a little bit later on. So it's a theorem from 92. Now, it says that the Hitchin component is homeomorphic to a vector space, and its dimension is what it should be, which is that. And this holds for, again, for G R split simple. So actually, Hitchin theorem says more, and I'm going to come back later to what it actually says. So that was a really beautiful theorem, and for quite a while, it was not known what sort of geometry does this Hitchin representation correspond to, except in the case of SL3R, where it relates to some amazing works by Goldman and Choi. So let's list some fact, and as Anna said, it's a kind of amazing fact that this Hitchin representation, this Hitchin component, can really be sustonified. And that's kind of amazing to see that all the tools that Thurston has left us can be used in this context as well. So the idea that you can relate, so I'm going to be very vague here, Hitchin representation to dynamics. So in the same way that you can say a lot about hyperbolic structure by considering the geodesic flow, and as a consequence, you obtain some nice result. For instance, that if flow is Hitchin, a Hitchin representation is a quasi-isometry. So that's the... This is, of course, a very different situation in SL2C. You know, there are lots of representation, and only a rather big but still small part consists of discrete representation. Here, the whole component corresponds of a discrete representation, and they're actually even quasi-isometries. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry, quasi-isometric embedding. Or should I say quasi-convex? I don't know. Okay. Another fact which is not related to this being a quasi-isometry is that the fact that this is, and this is directly from a Hitchin theorem, that it's a smooth, a symplectic manifold. Another interesting fact, which is somehow related to this one, is that the fact that the mapping class group, which I'm going to denote by mod S, acts properly on the Hitchin component. So we can make the quotient of this Hitchin component by the mapping class group. But so now here's something. So in some senses, the study of this Hitchin component is kind of boring because you say, oh, let's look at this result in the classical Teichmuller theory. Does this hold for Hitchin components? And most of the time, the answer is yes. So here is, let's say, quite often, even if it takes some sweat to prove it. So let's just say something which makes the life a little bit different from Teichmuller theory. So I'm going to say presumably, and I'm going to explain why. So you may want to consider this volume, right? So the volume of this quotient. So this is the integral over this object of a Goldman form to the maximal value. So so if G is different from SL to R, then this volume is actually infinite. So that's a very different feature than what happens for Riemann moduli space. And why do I say presumably? Because I don't know proof in general, but I just know a proof when S is a puncture torus, which of course I should doesn't fit in my theory as I said before, and G is SL3R. And the proof actually uses a generalization of Maxschein's identity for these groups and the ideas of Mariam Mirzakhani to compute the volumes of this object. Maximal.
Is that most parabolic?
Yeah, the puncture should go to unipotent, right? It doesn't really fit in the theory of each incomponent as well defined here, but in using this for Goncharov coordinates, it does make sense to compute this stuff. Can you repeat that?
Can I think of the space of quasi-Fuchsian representation as a two-component like
this? Yes and no. So, no. And yes, because a Hitchin representation has something in common with a quasi-Fuchsian representation, which is they are anosov. So it's still now that in general you can prove that anosov representations are quasi-isometries, and the mapping class group acts properly on anosov representation. So quasi-Fuchsian set on Hitchin component lives in a common world, so to say.
You're allowed to take G equal SL2C, right?
No. Real split, simple. That's yeah. So thank you for letting me emphasize that. It's the group has to be real split.
And then you already told Hamilton you don't require the representation
of
the screen. So
quasi-Fuchsian
is a very complicated set. Your set is a real algebraic, right?
Right. This object, yeah. Actually, the representation variety is not even, when you take a real group, it's not even a real algebraic variety. That's scary, but that's true. It's just a semi-algebraic set. So I said I don't want to go there. So this is some facts about Hitchin components, which are interesting and which come from this certainification. But I want to come back to my original question. So do this Hitchin component carries a complex geometry. So in the case of SL2R, we have this complex geometry that comes from Riemann uniformization theorem. So the question is, what happens for other group? And now I'm going to, so that's this construction of Hitchin component clear? No more questions? Yeah, the exception. So here's the point: when you take a complex group, it has several real forms. So one of them is the compact form, and then you have a whole bunch of those. And then there is the one which is the least compact. Least compact meaning that the real carton is split. So even exceptional groups have we are going to see one of those guys just now. What? Yeah, there is Fuchsian representation there. That's a Costant theory. That's a beautiful theory again. Really amazing paper. So if you want to learn more about that, you should come to this MSRI program next. Well, maybe I shouldn't say that because we don't have any office yet. Yeah, you should stop by, yeah. Okay, so what about complex geometry? So now I'm going to make a huge restriction And this huge restriction follows from the method I'm going to explain. So huge restriction is now, so assume that G is, so I said real split, simple, Lie group, so that as before, and then comes a huge restriction, which is of rank 2. So that's a very long sentence, and actually it's much shorter to write the list of the group. The list of the group is really short. It just means that I'm going to consider the case G is SL3R, SP4R, and G22. So G22 means the real split form of G2. So in this case, we have a complex analytic interpretation. So it's the following theorem. So that is the Hitchin component, so when G, in this case, the Hitchin component can be identified as a space of JQ, so where J is a complex structure on S, and Q is a holomorphic differential, so something which can be written locally as f of z dz to a certain degree, which depends of the group. And what is this degree? So this degree is equal to 3 when the group is SL3R, 4 for SP4R, and 6 for G22. So in other words, this Hitchin component can be described as a fiber bundle over Teichmuller space. So Hitchin component can be realized. So of course, this is pretty stupid because as a set, I mean, there's just the same cardinality. So what I mean by that is that in an analytic way, in a real analytic way, and in a mapping class group invariant way, so this can be written as a bundle over Teichmuller space and the fiber at every point is the holomorphic differential of a certain degree. So that's a grown-up notation for holomorphic differentials. Okay, so I will explain later, kind of a conjectural generalization of that. But let me just state some corollaries of this. So first, there is an equivalent theorem which say that if rho is Hitchin, so we know it is discrete and faithful, then there exists a unique homotopically equivalent minimal surface in the quotient of the symmetric space of G by the representation. So that's exactly the exact translation of the theorem. So when you can prove the existence of a unique minimal surface in this quotient, then you essentially have this theorem.
What is
symmetric space of G? No, G mod K is very bad. Even G model is not good either. Ah, okay. space of Cartan evolutions, of course.
And what is DFG for SL2R?
What is?
DFG for SL2R.
Oh, that's a very good question. And actually, it's an embarrassing question as well. So it's turned out the result holds, this one also holds for SL2R, for SL2 cross SL2, which is rank one, but does not fit in the theory. So there is two proofs of that. One by me and one by Rick Schoen, right? And well, if you want to have the correct one, maybe you should look at Rick's proof.
But this statement you wrote that you're erasing doesn't quite work. Or?
It does work. So it turned out that you can represent minimal surfaces into H2 cross H2.
The one you're erasing. Should we take
D
minus 1 or something?
No, D is equal to 2 for SL2 cross SL2. Yeah. So what is the degree of the holomorphic differential so that the space of holomorphic differential is, okay, so minus one. you have spent too much time in France. I'm sorry, Kurt. So that's an equivalent statement of this theorem. So another consequences, which is actually a very nice remark by a Genghan Cham and Ikan Kim. So it's a so it's essentially follow from a remark by Genghan Cham. I hope I'm saying the first name correctly, and Ikan Kim. That as a corollary, you get that H of SG carries actually a family of Keller metric. Of Keller structures. And of course, you want these Keller structures to be compatible with the function, so that the restriction to the function locus would be the Weyl-Petersen metric. So I can explain where does this result come from. It's a very nice result. It relies on a very deep result by Bernstein about Griffith's theory of emission bundles. So that's one corollary. Another corollary, which is rather a corollary of the technique, is an area rigidity result. So if you have a representation, for a representation rho of pi 1 of s into group G, we may well define one of these kind of invariant, which is just an infimum of all minimal surface, of all of the area of all minimal surface, so that s embedded into the symmetric space divided by rho. And of course, you want this to be a homotopy equivalent. So that's a kind of a Gromov type invariant. Until now, that this invariant, this object, is actually smooth in this context of a Hitchin representation. This is a smooth function. And the corollary runs as follows. So the minimal area, again, only for these three groups, is greater or equal than minus 2 pi chi of s, and equality if rho is function. So this function tells you whether the representation is function or not.
Just a question about the minimal surface.
They're going to be immersed, embedded, I don't know. Oh, I should also have said that. So this theorem I quoted was only for three groups, but actually it's only for two groups because one case was known, the case of SL3 of SS3 is due to, independently to John Loftin and myself. So it's really about two groups, but still. So now I'm going to do some fancy question. So this function grows when you go far from the functional representation. So what you would like to do is, so this is a question. So what about now the integral of e to the minus this minimal area function on d rho, so here again with respect to the Goldman volume form, on this quotient of this Hitchin component by the mapping class group mod S. So of course I would like this to be finite, and if I even want to be fancy, maybe I would like to put one of h bar here. And so just one remark, that if you believe that this quantity is finite, then if you make the asymptotic expansion, at least the first, I mean, when you take h bar goes to 0, you have this localization. It's going to localize on the function locus. And actually, it's going to localize as a characteristic class. No. It's going to localize on the minimum of that. Yeah, assuming it's finite, everything. It's going to localize to characteristic. It's like it's going to localize like characteristic numbers of a Riemann moduli space. So so that looks like a nice quantity to look at. So, okay. So there is one thing I really enjoyed about the discussion panel is that they really emphasize that it's what is very nice when you give talk is that it's very pleasant to give talk about some other people's work, especially when you love the work, and also because usually you have understood it so much better than the original person. So anyway, so I'm going to explain a little bit of this non-Abelian Hodge theory, because this is really a beautiful, really beautiful mathematics. And I want to explain a little bit of this Hitchin theorem, and that it says something much better than just being this Hitchin component being a vector space. So what is the actual content of Hitchin theorem? So that's the second part. So Hitchin theorem. So it tells that now I'm going to concentrate on the case of SLNR to make the life simple. So if you fix a complex structure J on the surface, and the theorem of Hitchin says, so it's from 90, did I say it was from 92, that the Hitchin component identified, maybe I'm just going to take the case of SLNR, and maybe I should be more precise, this identify with a sum for I equal 2 to n to the bound to the set of holomorphic differentials with respect to the Riemann surface. So this is a set of holomorphic differential of a certain degree. So it does look like a lot the theorem which was here, which I erased, which was this Riemann interpretation of the H1 as a abelian differential. And it indeed does follows the same kind of ideas, except of course it's a little more involved. So let's explain the different step in this proof. No. It's really the space itself. And of course, just an exercise in Riemann-Roch that it's the same dimension. This exercise I cannot do myself, but sure you can do it. Exactly. For n equal 2, it's going to be the quadratic differentials. Well, in the case of n equal 2, it does depend on the choice of the complex structure. So I want to explain the proof of that. I mean, not the proof, but the grand scheme of things. So actually it comes from the theory, so you have to, so now I'm going to change gear and say the context when G is a complexly group. So because I have to use complexly group. So for instance, in this case, it's going to be SLNC. So there are three players, so you want to start from a representation, O, a representation from pi 1 of S into G. So that's your starting point. And then you want to proceed and to arrive to an equivariant harmonic mapping, rho harmonic mapping. So this step is like finding the harmonic representative of a form, and then you want to proceed to another guy, which is called the Higgs bundle. I take your advice very seriously, Kurt. And then from the Higgs bundle, so I'm going to explain what is a Higgs bundle, and then from the Higgs bundle, you finally proceed to holomorphic differentials. And all this, I mean, some of the arrows here are trivial, some are deep theorem, holomorphic differentials. And I need another chalk. So when you have a representation of a surface group into G, then you can associate because the symmetric space is a KP1, you have equivariant rho equivariant mapping from S to the symmetric space of G. So what is the rho equivariant mapping? It's just a pair F. It's just a map F from the universal cover of S to the symmetric space, so that F composed with gamma is equal to rho of gamma composed with F. Okay, so this you can do. But then now you have all this set of mappings, and among all this set of mappings you have you choose a complex structure. So among all this equivariant mapping, there is one which is better, which is the one which minimizes the energy. So it's something which are very familiar in the case. So this has nothing to do with surfaces. This is in any dimension. So in the case of S1, we're very familiar to the fact that if you want to represent the best matrix, then there is this geodesic that does it. So that's a theorem by A. Colette. Again, it has nothing to do with surfaces, that there exists a unique row equivariant mapping it's not true in general. So for instance, not true even for S1, because if you take a representation with a cusp, then there is no way there is a shortest geodetic there. So you have to impose some, you have to avoid cusps. And for instance, an idea is to assume that assuming rho is reductive, which is again a complicated way to say that there is no cusps in the representation. So that's a difficult theorem. Now, harmonic. That was the question? Yeah, okay.
Is it Eels-Sampson on the stitching component, basically?
That's a good question. So the question you're asking is essentially, do you have surface group in higher rank lattice? But that's a very nice question. Anyway, so actually, Eels-Sampson theorem is what you really need to know, and then you have a little understanding of what is geometric negative curvature, and then you finally get this. So how do you go now from Higgs bundle? So now really use the fact that you have a surface. When you have a harmonic mapping, so if F is harmonic, it satisfies some nice equation, which is a critical point of the equation, and this equation is a Euler-Lagrange equation. And how do you see this Euler-Lagrange equation? So you consider the differential of F, and you see this object as a form on S with value in the pullback bundle of X. And here, X is a symmetric space. And so you want to turn that into a complex object, so you complexify everything. So let's call it phi. So you consider, which is a 1-0 part of F, and you consider this as a 1-0 form of S with value in the complexified bundle of that. So again, if you are afraid of the 1-0 decoration, which I've been afraid for really years, it just means that you complexify TF itself. You consider it as a complex, a linear object. So what is the I have to erase that. So let's recap again. So you have this harmonic mapping. Forget it is harmonic mapping. Then you produce this, actually it's just for any mapping, you can use this phi, which is a 1-0 form on S with value in some bundle E. And E is what? It's a complexified bundle of the pullback bundle of the tangent bundle. Okay? So it turns out that this object is equipped with a connection. So when you complexify it, you obtain something which is equipped with a del bar operator. So this object actually is a holomorphic vector bundle. And in the context of symmetric spaces, not only it is a holomorphic vector bundle, but it carries a G structure. So it's a G bundle, it's an algebra. It's a bundle by Lie algebras. And so what is the Euler-Lagrange equation now? It's just to say that the phi is holomorphic. So it means that locally, you can write phi as A of Z dz, where A of Z is a matrix which is holomorphic. So that's exactly what the Higgs bundle is. So Higgs bundle is a pair E phi where E is a, yeah, I see that, yeah, maybe Beamer sometimes is nice. N time, the Lie algebra. It's an adjoint matrix. It's an element in the Lie algebra. So let's say again what's the Higgs bundle is. So that's a holomorphic G bundle. See, it's with respect with a certain group. And this is a one-form. It's a one-form with value in this bundle. Holomorphic one-form with value in this bundle. So from equivariant harmonic mapping, you produce Higgs bundles. Well, one of the big theorems of Itchin is to prove that conversely, given a Higgs bundle, satisfying a nice condition, you can produce actually a harmonic mapping. And now I want to produce holomorphic differentials. So let's produce holomorphic differentials. And then you do exactly Chandvayer theory. So how to produce holomorphic differentials from your Higgs bundle? So the space of Higgs bundle, and you want to produce holomorphic differentials, and this is a beautiful and really amazing object which is called the Hitchin fibration. It's very easy to define, but it has amazing properties. So you start with your Higgs field, which is something of this form, and then you just take invariant polynomial. So for instance, in the context of SLNC, you just take the trace of A dz, f of z dz to z q, and that's going to be a holomorphic differential. So you have to be a little bit careful. You have to be a little bit careful because this object is just defined up to conjugacy, but that's good because you are taking invariant polynomials. And then the fact that this object is holomorphic implies that this one is holomorphic. So that's really like a Chandvayer theory. So let's recap a little bit the construction. So you have an equivariant harmonic mapping. And from equivariant harmonic mapping, you have a natural, easy, forgetful map to the character variety. Just you forget about the function, and you just keep the representation. Then you have another picture. So one is easy again. Which is you go to the space of Higgs bundles, which is a purely complex analytic object. So that's it's really generalization, a full generalization of the Riemann theorem, and then you produce a holomorphic differential. So now there are some odd parts. So all these maps are easy. So now let's draw the tough arrows. So this is a Corlett. This is a Hitchin Simpson. And this is something which is the so-called Hitchin section theorem. So I should emphasize that this is not, these objects are really just an isomorphism, right? But this is just a projection. So this is a section. And actually, if you use this section, you are going to end up in a subspace of the character variety, which is going to be Zhu's representation with takes value in the real split form of the group. OK. So I have only, I mean, all these theorems are really amazing. And the papers by Hitchin are very well written. So if you want to do something after this talk, read that. And so what about minimal surface? So let's recap the situation. So we have this, say, to a representation rho, which belongs to this Hitchin component, we can produce a bunch of holomorphic differentials, Q2, Q to the n, and Q2, and Qi here. This belongs to this holomorphic differential of degree I. Thank you. G is a real split group, so again, here is SLNR.
But throughout this computation, G is complex.
Here G is complex. Except here. The image of this Hitchin section, if you go this way, is going to be the real locus in that complex locus. No, it's not.
No.
SL2C. Symmetric space of SL2C is H3. H3 is not. I do like. You will see. I don't think you will see. But I'm very happy with an odd dimensional complex manifold. But definitely H3 is not complex. So now, what about this little part? Okay. So that's the point about minimal surface. So now let's consider the complex structure as a variable, and let's consider. So I should stay here. So interpretation of the quadratic differential part. So the fact is that classical fractal differential geometry, that is Q2 of the representation rho is equal to 0, this is the same thing as to say that the equivalent harmonic mapping is minimal. So in other words, it's quite natural to change the base. So I mean to consider the following bundle. So let Q be the bundle over Teichmuller space such that the fiber of Q at J is a sum of holomorphic differentials of degree I, but forgetting about the quadratic differential part. So this object Q has the same dimension as a character variety. So Q, the dimension of Q, the dimension of Q is the same thing as the dimension of the Hitchin component. And then you have a natural map through this Hitchin business of this space Q maps to the Hitchin component. And what is this map? So this space, you interpret it as a space of equivariant minimal surface and you just forget about the map and consider the representation. So the main theorem which I explained before was to say that this map, psi, the main theorem, I can restate it. Oh, theorem. If G has rank 2, phi is injective. Why is this enough? Because in general, for any group, there's another theorem that for any group, quasi-isometry G, rho, there exists a rho equivariant minimal surface. But we know in the case of hyperbolic geometry that this minimal surface may not be unique. So in other words, this map phi is always surjective. And only in the case of rank 2, I've been able to prove that this map is actually injective. And I guess I'm over time. So I'm not going to explain one of the ID of the proof, unless you ask.
There's probably going
to
be a question from this area. Questions for our speaker?
So,
yeah,
here. So, there's an energy function in tightness.
Right? Yep.
Do you prove it from that?
No, I don't know how to prove that. I just prove it. So, I prove it's proper. So, that's the properness implies the existence of this minimal surface. But uniqueness goes through a different way. So. I'm just giving 1 minute. So we have this symmetric space, which I'm going to call G mod K, even though it's very bad. And above that, you have the bundle. So T is the maximal torus of K. So the idea that if you have this minimal surface that comes from this Hitchin construction, this actually minimal surface lift to some very nice object in G mod T, and these objects actually are complex, are holomorphic curves. And why are you happy with that? You are much happier with dealing with the deformation theory of holomorphic curves than dealing with the deformation theory of minimal surfaces. So that's the way the proof goes. It's not by proving the convexity of the energy functional. And actually, if you could prove it just in the case of SL2R, you would obtain the result for SL2 cross SL2 cross SL2 cross SL2. You need this.
Oh, yes, same question.
Ian?
Can you see the shape operator for these surfaces from the differentials?
You mean the second fundamental form? Shape operator, yeah. Here the point. In this higher rank, the tangent space is really, really messy. So it's very hard to understand the shape operator. I mean, I can't. Maybe people can, but I can't. And so that's why it's so much easier to go through this very fine trick.
Kurt.
So I wondered if you could just go through this beautiful diagram that you just raised.
Yeah.
The identities of G is SL2R, whether GR is SL2R, GC is SL2C, and you start with a quasi-GC representation.
So you get the equivalent map, then you obtain, you're going to obtain, so the Hitchin fibration is the, so Hitchin fibration is just a quadratic differential. So just the Hopf differential, so it tells you whether your harmonic mapping is conformal or not.
But more so, maybe you could recreate the figure of what is there.
I'm going to go back in the slides. Yeah, I know that. So you have harmonic mapping. So then you have Higgs bundles. And then you have holomorphic differentials, right?
And then you have
the representation variety, right? What? Well, I mean, this picture is a bit misleading. Maybe it should be this way, right? Meaning these objects are basically the same, right? But this is really a fibration. This is a Hitchin fibration, right? I mean, they are the same, meaning that they, it's a theorem that they, if you choose a complex structure, then you have a, just claim that right, it's bijective with harmonic maps, yeah. With, of course, some decoration you have to take care of. Yeah, so there was this something which is a section here, which is called the Hitchin section. Everything should be called Hitchin, so let's forget about this, putting Hitchin everywhere. So there's this Hitchin section here. So when you go back here, and you finally arrive here, you're not going to fill up the full, but you're just going to fill up the representation variety for the real group. So what does it tell you in the case of SL2R? It tells you that given the quadratic differential, you can produce a, this is actually what Mike Wolf did in his physics exactly at the same time as Hitchin did. Given the quadratic differential, there exists a unique harmonic mappings whose Hopf differential is this quadratic differential. So in the context of SL2R, this is Mike Wolf's result.
Okay, so my question was, you start with quasi-Fuchsian,
there is no quasi-function here, so you talk with SL2C, right?
SL2C.
SL2C.
Let's say it's quasi-function.
Okay, you talk. You start. Yeah. Okay. So you produce a harmonic mapping. Okay. You produce a Higgs bundle, and then you produce a quadratic differential, which is Hopf differential. So what's your?
And then you go back.
Oh, then you go back, and what the hell is it? No idea. I don't know. Not canonically. You have to, using a complex structure. So you're asking whether it's related. So it's not related to the other stuff that you know you're thinking of, like CP1 structures. It's a different story. It's a different story.
Isn't this just you map the surface to a harmonic map and you pull back and form the structure of the image?
Is that right? That's one possibility.
Repeat that.
You fixed it, a conformal structure in the base.
Yeah.
For a quasi-Fuchsian manifold, you have a harmonic map, and you pull back the conformal structure of the image. Mm-hmm. That's a point of tightness.
No.
So there definitely is a harmonic function for a quasi-Fuchsian representation. There is a harmonic embedding. You take the function, which is 0 and 1,
I think it's this kind of object is called
a... That's level set of a harmonic function. It's not a
matched. Yeah, it's called a...
Okay, this sounds like a good thing to do over the break, so...